Paul Prydecker here with Attitude Adjustment on EEA Radio. And my host, co-host friend, Mike Morgan's with us. Hello, Mike.
Yes, I am. Hi, Paul.
So yesterday was a busy day on the field. I think today is going to be a little bit more busy. The winds have picked up, which means the smoke has cleared out. So, you know, it's a normal EAA. A bit unpredictable, but always fun.
I wish I were there. It turns out that I'm not. I'm speaking to you from a remote location.
We wish you were here as well.
Yeah, thanks.
But happy to introduce our next guest, Lee Collins, who is the president and CEO of the National Flight Training Alliance. Lee, you and I have spent some time together.
We have. It's quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, and I suspect we'll continue to do so.
Yes.
NFTA has been, you know, key and instrumental in facilitating a project called the Part 141 Modernization of Training. Mm-hmm. And just give us a snapshot of how that is going, and then we'll get into some of the other questions.
You know, when we were here last year, we were in the middle of the project. It was undergoing at that time. So we had a deadline of April 1st, which fortunately we were able to meet. And that report came out on April the 1st and was submitted to the administrator and the FAA. At that point, we said to the FAA, we wanted you to step back and have 90 days or so to do some due diligence and some study behind all of the recommendations. Even though they were part of the process throughout, there was significant work that still needed to be done in terms of reading the report and digesting it sort of in total. So that's been going on. We've now finished that 90-day window, at least in my view. And we want to get back together and circle back here, not only at AirVenture, but also in the weeks ahead, to sort of update ourselves. All right, now what's next? What do you envision for this, and can we get it done in a reasonable time frame?
So this massive report contains, I'm told, 8 major recommendations on modernizing how 141 instruction happens. Pick off maybe the biggest 2 or 3. What will they involve?
When you look at the first recommendation, which is about establishing a central management office, one of the overall goals of the report was to incentivize participation in 141. And when you ask schools across the spectrum, both who are currently in that regulatory framework and then those outside in the 61, what is it you don't like about 141? It was consistently, you know, in the 90th percentile. It's too laborious. It's too overcome with policy and other inefficiencies that just make it's impossible to deal with. And a lot of that is because it's farmed out to the individual FISDOs to manage and oversee with a very limited staff and a very limited set of resources to get that job done. So it just doesn't happen. And you literally looked at normative issues of 6 months, 12 months or longer to get changes made or to initiate a new certificate. That became then the overall number one recommendation for that reason and many others, but to streamline the process and to make more efficient what goes on with the FAA and how it interacts with the flight training industry by designating one place where there is expertise and there is modeling from across the nation. We felt it was easier on the timelines, but also on creating a standard that would be evenly applied industry-wide. Beyond that, you said a couple of recommendations. I think one of the other things we looked at now is the data collection, data analysis piece. We know that in the airline industry and other aviation sectors, SMS and quality management systems have been around for a couple of decades now and have proven track records of significant safety level improvements. We felt like it was time for that to come to the training sector. And so the look at the ability to collect data now with the off-the-shelf products from other third parties in the industry that allow us to do that in a way that usually only airlines could do before would give a flight training provider the opportunity to improve their operation, to improve their operational efficiency over data collection and then that analysis that then could become a closed loop in training that allowed us to focus on those things that weren't working well and not expend, you know, overly amount of resources unnecessarily on things that we already knew we were doing well. So I think those are the two that come to mind most frequently, but keep this in mind. The 8 recommendations really are part of a whole. If somebody tries to carve those up and just, well, let's implementing these 3 or these 4 over here, it's almost like serving and not the entire pie.
Yeah, Mike, one of the interesting, you know, stats that came out of all this was that of all the flight training that's going on in the U.S., 38% of it is being done currently by 141 schools, and there are roughly 510 Part 141 schools, which means there's an exceptional amount of training that's, you know, continues to be done at the Part 61 level. So when Lee is addressing the efficiencies of, you know, this recommendation report, if somebody wants to stay as a Part 61 school, that's great. You know, it's there's that mechanism. But if some of the inefficiencies that he was addressing are removed, it might incentivize more people to be in the 141 scheme. But we have to deal with it from a policy and regulatory standpoint.
I'm kind of curious here, as you're listening to you talk about this, if there's a difference between what percentage of aviation professionals are going through 141 and going through 61, and is that, do you have a shortage of slots or establishments that are that could or should be 141?
Yeah, I'm not sure that we could say there's a shortage of establishments, but when you look at the largest flight training provider in this country, ATP, they're a Part 61 provider, and for a very good reason in their view. It would be almost impossible for them to do what they do under the 141 scheme because it is so antiquated and still to this day has requirements for you to have, you know, a chief pilot at so many different locations and an assistant chief pilot at every location that you conduct training at. That would make it almost impossible for them to staff. So they stay out of this format. Yet, they said if it were efficient and if it made sense operationally, because we want to, flight training is not known for having high profit margins, correct? So every percent or two we can squeeze in efficiency here or there makes a tremendous difference in the bottom line. And that's really what we're trying to do with 141, is that if we make it something that is not only easy to do but improves safety, we think more and more flight training providers will probably choose that pathway.
We're talking with Lee Collins, who's the president and CEO of the National Flight Training Alliance, about modernizing Part 141 flight training.
If you could project yourself into the next few months, mm-hmm. what would success look like?
I think a commitment from the FAA to go full throttle on this forward, to take the recommendations that have been done, and included in this 471-page report, some of the I think best work is buried in the appendices in the back, where you look at a complete red line of the existing regulation, which is an amendment, you know, a copy, cut, paste, and then a brand new reg. So we did both and said to the FAA, you can amend the existing reg or you can start from scratch and use this one, which would be much shorter and much easier. I think, you know, determining which of those choices is best in their part, and then undertaking that on a expedited framework. I think that the regulatory footprint on this, 80% of the work's already been done. Mm-hmm. If we had done this in an ARC, what we did was the ARC, essentially. And so they can take this work and begin working immediately on it. I don't think they have to go back and replow this field. And we can get it done quickly. It's just going to take some will and some determination that, look, these are points that are on the field we can pick up right now if we want to get to it and make it happen.
Lee, is there regulation that's going to be involved? I'm sorry, is there legislation that's going to be involved, or is it just regulation?
Right now it's purely regulatory, but keep this in mind, too. The FAA reauthorization bill of 2024, when it was going through its process in late 2023 and early 2024, there was in the base text of that bill a requirement to update 141, much as they had done a number of years ago with some other areas of outdated regulatory stuff at the FAA. They withdrew that language in deference to us giving this effort here. My suspicion is that if it's not done prior to the next FAA bill, which will be next year, we'll start laying down the markers for that early in 2027, you'll see this back in that base text, because it's just something so fundamental that needs to get done. We're looking at a regulatory framework that's 50 years old or more in some cases.
And in fact, the last time Part 141 regulations were changed, I believe, was in 1997.
And that was just a portion of it. But the stuff was written overall 50 years ago in terms of the footprint.
And what that means is all of the technology that is out in the world, you know, today wasn't even addressed or probably wasn't even thought of. So mm-hmm. So much of this report is kind of based on how can we leverage, you know, the technology to help improve flight training. And if we don't take advantage and leverage it, we're really missing a big opportunity.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about one of the overall goals, again, was to improve student outcomes and teaching students now the way students learn and adapting technology to those learning styles is fundamentally important to what we do.
So what's the next step for you? I know you're very involved in, you know, you're on the Hill and you're mm-hmm. very involved. So what's the next step?
Well, you know, everybody's watching. We had overwhelming positive response from folks in both the congressional and Senate committees that have oversight on aviation. They thought this was wonderful work that had been done, well past time to be done, and also something that looked like an easy get for the FAA. Not often do you have it teed up this well for you in their space. So I think we'll continue to watch it from that perspective. We'll continue to interact with the FAA. I talk with them weekly, and I talk at every level. So sure. We're trying to take the temperature there. They have a lot on their plate, no doubt. They are resource constrained and people constrained, but you know, it's our job to get it done.
Well, and it's a partnership with right. you know, with the regulators. It always is. But I think one of the good things about this group is that we could really say with confidence that it's been industry led and supported by the FAA.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the FAA is not in a position to tell the training industry what to do, but they are in a position to support what we do.
Correct.
Yeah.
And you look at the model from years ago where you would have an ARC where the FAA would put together a limited slice of the industry to go through the process, make the recommendations. They'd come out with a rule, and then the industry would go, absolutely not, that's not going to work. And then you just go back and restart that process all over again. Putting industry on the front end of this really makes sense for the future.
We've been speaking with Lee Collins, President and CEO of the National Flight Training Alliance. Thank you so much, Lee.
You're
welcome. This is EA Radio.
Thank you to be here.